Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
At this point, there should be alarm bells going off all over, not only in our communities, but all over the state and federal government agencies.
A federal fisheries council declines action on salmon bycatch. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Monday, June 20th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, after weeks of heated debate, a drag queen leads story time at the Ketchikan Library.
It was an opportunity to prove what we were doing is more than okay to all those people who thought it wasn't.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Are you ready to start accelerating your child's future through education? The Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program is expanding its reach with new opportunities in Juneau and Southeast Alaska. With ANSEP's Acceleration Academy, high school students can earn college credit, save thousands of dollars in college costs, and experience fun, hands-on learning. ANSEP, it's a better way to learn. Learn more and enroll at ansep.net/acceleration. This message sponsored by ANSEP.
Governor Mike Dunleavy says he plans to decide soon whether to sign a bill that would provide state recognition for Alaska's 229 federally recognized tribes.
We're in the process of making a decision, and we'll have that answer next week.
The bill passed the State House and Senate last month. The legislation is a priority for Native leaders in the state. It would require the state government to recognize Alaska's tribes as sovereign nations and engage with them on a government-to-government basis. But Dunleavy was noncommittal when asked whether he thought the state should offer recognition.
Well, I mean, we know the feds recognize the sovereignty of the tribes, and the state has relationships with our tribes. You know, the only reservation concept is Metlakatla in the state of Alaska. And so, The state, we deal with tribes all the time, at the tribal government all the time. We have compacts with the tribal governments.
Advocates for the tribal recognition bill say the measure would allow for continuity between governors' administrations and allow tribes to make longer-term plans with state officials. Tribal leaders are pursuing a similar ballot initiative that may go before voters this fall. Despite hours of testimony from residents living along the Yukon and Kuskokwim rivers who called for urgent action to curb the bycatch of Chinook and Chum salmon in the Bering Sea trawl fisheries, the North Pacific Fishery Management Council last week decided to approach the problem more methodically. In a unanimous vote near the end of its 5-day meeting in Sitka, the council recommended further study of salmon declines in the Bering Sea and a closer look at their connection to climate change. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
When you look at the bar graphs of salmon abundance in the Yukon River, the third largest river in North America, you do a double take. The graphs are scaled to millions, and the bars, which show peaks and valleys over the years, just disappear in 2020 and 2021. The forecast is no better this season.
At this point, there should be alarm bells going off all over, not only in our communities, but all over the state and federal government agencies.
Vivian Corthius is the chief executive officer for the Association of Village Council Presidents, a consortium of 56 federally recognized tribes on the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. Among the region's 27,000 residents, Corthius said 98% of households harvested salmon. Council meetings typically involve hours of presentations on the scientific research into stock decline, but Corthius pointed out a glaring oversight.
But your report don't show are the families in Western Alaska who are worrying about putting fish away to feed their children throughout the winter, and parents and grandparents who are unable to pass our way of life down to our children and future grandchildren.
I normally put away 2,000 chum salmon to feed my dog team. Last year, I caught only 2.
Mike Williams Sr. is from Akiak. He chairs the Kuskokwim River Intertribal Commission, which represents 33 tribes in the Kuskokwim River drainage. The salmon collapse is nearly as dire on the Kuskokwim. Williams was discouraged that the Pollock trawl fleet so far this year had already caught and discarded 5,100 Chinook salmon, and last year caught and discarded 540,000 chum. He said, "The waste of a single fish is unjust for indigenous fishermen." Nevertheless, Williams recognized that the problem was complex.
We understand that is not every salmon caught by pollock fisheries bound for Western Alaska. We understand that other factors like climate change and competition with hatchery fish have impacts on our salmon in their marine environment.
37 people signed up to testify before the council on the issue, by far and away most of them urging the council to reduce the amount of allowable bycatch of Chinook and chum salmon by the pollock fleet. But it was clear from reports about conditions in the Bering Sea that although the bycatch numbers are significant, they're still a fraction of the overall decline in salmon. Stephanie Madsen, the director of the At-Sea Processors Association, sympathized with the crisis faced by the villagers of Western Alaska, but she suggested that it was a mistake to pin the blame on trawlers, if at all.
I understand from public testimony and reality that it really is at this time the only thing that is controllable. You can put your hand on the dial and you can turn it down and hope that there will be an impact to those that are in crisis. But Mr. Chairman, I'm concerned that although we are controllable, that dial doesn't have the ability to address all the variables that we have heard today that appear to be causing the decline. Climate change, lack of food, competition with the hatchery fish.
Madsen argued that the decline in salmon was a coastwide issue and that if the council took steps to reduce the incidental catch of salmon by trawlers and the results were not what folks are hoping for, disappointment will continue. The effort to play down the significance of trawl bycatch did not sit well with representatives of other fishing industry sectors who testified on the issue. Sitka resident and former council member Linda Benkin is the executive director of the Alaska Longline Fishermen's Association. Benkin was a key figure in working to ban trawling off the coast of southeast Alaska. She didn't believe that trawling, although an important provider of protein to the world, was in any way sustainable, even when council member Ann Vanderhoven, who works for the Seattle-based Arctic Storm Management Group, argued the point that trawling was environmentally friendly.
Yes, there's certainly a lower carbon footprint when you have the kind of massive fish that's being harvested in the pollock fishery, but it is a system that doesn't localize that access. We've done a lot of seafood distributions in the last few years to communities in need, and what those people want is their local foods. I mean, you can send them pollock and say it's a low carbon footprint, but it doesn't meet their need. It doesn't meet their culture. It doesn't meet their connections to that place.
Given the intensity of the feelings around bycatch, the motion brought forward by the council's advisory panel was tepid, as introduced by Rachel Baker of the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
The council commits to continued improvements in bycatch with the goal of minimizing bycatch at all levels of salmon and pollock abundance.
There was also a call for further research to tease out whether lowering the current caps on the trawl bycatch of Chinook and chum would make any difference at all to the recovery of the stocks in Western Alaska. And as a concession to the many affected residents who testified from the Arctic Yukon-Kuskokwim region, the motion included language to incorporate more traditional knowledge into the decision-making process in the future. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
A new lightning-caused wildfire is burning off the Dalton Highway. The Alaska Fire Service reports that the Fish Fire is located west of the highway near Mile marker 116, and is being fought by smoke jumpers and with aircraft. AFS Information Officer Andy Gray says the fire has forced evacuation of the nearby BLM Arctic Circle Campground.
Yeah, the Arctic Circle Campground, as most people know, is very popular right around the solstice. We just want to make sure people avoid the area and get out of the area because there are firefighters on the ground, airplanes, helicopters, a lot of activity up there.
The fire, which was estimated at 500 acres earlier this afternoon, is sending smoke across the highway, and travelers are asked to avoid the area. Drivers who must transit that section of the highway are asked to go slowly, turn on headlights, and watch out for firefighters. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a Fairbanks man drove his electric car from Fairbanks to Dead Horse and back.
For the majority of the way, I just did 35 miles per hour, so it was quite a lengthy drive.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Alaska's unique approach to mental health funding is improving the lives of Alaskans who experience behavioral health conditions and developmental disabilities. The Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority has a responsibility to generate revenue from its 1 million acres of land and the resources they contain. The trust uses this revenue to help fund statewide programs and initiatives that positively impact trust beneficiaries. To learn more, visit alaskamentalhealthtrust.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Mental Health Trust.
Children of all ages turned out en masse to attend the Ketchikan Public Library's first ever Drag Queen Storytime. As KRBD's Eric Stone reports, that's after city leaders declined to cancel the controversial event.
This book is called The Hips of the Drag Queen Go Swish, Swish, Swish.
After weeks of heated debate, a drag queen named Luna sat down to read a book to children at Ketchikan's Public Library on Friday.
Hair on the drag queen goes up, 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 up.
When she's not in drag, Luna goes by Tommy Varela Kozak.
I'm a public school teacher. I think education is so important. And to come down here and be able to do this accomplishes two things.
One, she says, is to simply entertain kids.
Kids get to come in and have a great time and celebrate pride. People, kids who maybe have same-sex parents or gay uncles and aunts, etc. But at the same time, I think it was an opportunity to prove what we were doing is more than okay to all those people who thought it wasn't.
Children and parents turned out by the dozens for the event celebrating Pride Month. Library Director Pat Tully says the library had to add two more readings to accommodate everyone who wanted to come.
This, I think, is probably the biggest story time we've ever had.
It almost didn't happen. A firestorm erupted on social media when the library announced the reading, and twice members of the city council tried to cancel the story time, including a day before the event.
The city should not be promoting or advocating for events where the goal is to normalize gender fluidity in young children.
That's City Council Member Riley Gass speaking at a meeting on Thursday, the day before the Storytime event was scheduled. He asked the council to prevent the reading from going forward.
Encouraging young, impressionable children to pursue this lifestyle is dangerous and should not be promoted, advertised, and sponsored by city departments or in city buildings.
Residents crowded the council chambers to deliver almost 2 hours of testimony on the issue. It was split almost evenly between supporters and opponents. But the council ultimately rejected the request to cancel the event on a 5-2 vote. City Council Member Judy Zinge said she didn't buy Gass's argument.
If you're that worried that seeing a bit of glitter is going to change your child sexually, then yes, you should probably stay home. You probably shouldn't take your child there. I'm not going to support this because I think it's very discriminatory. And I really am embarrassed to be sitting here knowing that we have to deal with this.
Other council members, including Janalee Gage and Mark Flora, said they weren't sure the city could legally prevent the event from going forward. In a 10-page memo, the city's attorney said canceling the event could violate a local non-discrimination ordinance, state civil rights law, and the First Amendment. Back at the library, four police officers, including the police chief, joined Storytime supporters standing guard as attendees filed in. Kindergarten teacher Rebecca King stood outside the front door with an umbrella at the ready.
And we're just here in case there's yelling and shouting to use our umbrellas to help shield kids from the protesters, but so far it's been lovely and peaceful.
And it stayed that way. The most visible opposition was a lone protester, Sam Ryan, who stood by himself with a sign bearing a handwritten Bible verse.
I am expressing my displeasure with the city council's decision last night.
Kids and parents who showed up for the event gave rave reviews. 14-year-old Inessa Kapralova said Luna looked beautiful in her purple rhinestone-studded dress and platinum blonde wig.
And I'm jealous of her makeup. Like, it was like 10 times better than I could ever do, and that's impressive.
12-year-old Kehlani Clevenger said it was her first time ever seeing a drag queen.
I loved it. I loved how open they were and that how you could be anything you want to be.
Kehlani's younger brother, 10-year-old Kenyon Clevenger, was also a fan.
My favorite part was how everyone was saying like they don't want people going though, and then she ends up having to do the story time 3 times.
Though the story time is over, the backlash continues. There's a brewing campaign now to get a proposal to cut the library's funding on the municipal ballot this fall. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Eric Stone.
Like much of coastal Alaska, Southeast relies on barging in freight, everything from groceries to toilet paper. As inflation continues, the region is feeling the pinch at retail shops and at the pump, Coast Alaska's Angela Nenning reports.
Lloyd Rice is pulling a chain hoist, getting ready to offload freight from a container van. He's in the warehouse of Hammer & Weekon Hardware Store in downtown Petersburg. He's never sure how much freight there will be until it arrives.
It depends when it just shows up at the Seattle terminal.
These boxes of merchandise got shipped in from Seattle on AML, Alaska Marine Lines, the region's largest barge company. Rice will go through the paperwork and expects increases. Suppliers are charging more.
Sometimes the invoices have significantly increased. Sometimes I say to myself, at some point throughout this inflation going on, the product is not going to be sellable to anybody in the community.
The hardware store sells everything from commercial fishing gear to potting soil to kitchenware. But it's not just the cost of these goods going up. It's getting it here. AML has tripled its fuel surcharge over the past year, raising it to 26%.
Last year, we've seen so many increases.
Standing nearby is Jim Floyd, the general manager for this hardware store, as well as the company's grocery store and convenience store. He says they bring in more food than anything else.
We get charged by the weight. Basically, it's between 30 and 35 cents a pound currently. So you're talking about a 10-pound bag of flour, that's $3. That's added just for the weight. And then you have to add the fuel surcharge on top of that.
The company imports goods on the barge twice a week, filling around 3 40-foot container vans.
The problem is that's the third increase just in the fuel surcharge, not to mention almost a 5% increase in our rates year over year. So, and people notice it when they go to the check stands and the cost of everything is so much higher.
Especially the heavy items.
You know, honestly, it's ridiculous how much we pay for water just because of the weight. So when I see people buying cases of water, it's just like I cringe because they're paying just for freight and fuel.
Higher barge prices affect most retailers in Southeast.
There's definitely that ripple effect all across the board.
Angie Flickinger runs a business in Wrangell making body care products like soaps and lotions. She says the cost for some of her ingredients have gone up 20% in addition to increased shipping.
In my business, I have to ship up like large quantities of raw ingredients. And so just trying to plan all of that and factor in the shipping cost and adjust our prices for that, like that, I'm feeling that a lot.
But it's not just the freight going up. Flickinger lives 12 miles outside of Wrangell and drives into town most days to her manufacturing shop. Gas locally is about $5.50 a gallon. So lately, she's been working at home a few days a week and being more careful about planning trips.
Really, since the gas prices have risen up quite a bit, we've been kind of staying home on the weekends, too, and not driving to town on weekends if we don't have to.
Gas all over Southeast Alaska is over $5 a gallon at the pump. On June 13th, it was $5.42 in Sitka and $5.63 in Petersburg, which is a 33-cent jump within a month. In the capital city, prices range from $5.23 to $5.70 a gallon. The more remote communities have even higher prices. In Cake, on the northwest side of Kupernaf Island, residents are paying $7.74 a gallon. AML did not respond to requests for comment. Reporting in Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Are you ready to start accelerating your child's future through education? The Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program is expanding its reach with new opportunities in Juneau and Southeast Alaska. With ANSEP's Acceleration Academy, high school students can earn college credit, save thousands of dollars in college costs, and experience fun, hands-on learning. ANSEP, it's a better way to learn. Learn more and enroll at ansep.net/acceleration. This message sponsored by ANSEP.
two top facilitators working with the Anchorage Assembly and Mayor Dave Bronson's administration on the plan to transition out of the mass shelter at the Sullivan Arena have stepped down from their roles. Since August, Tom Barrett and Belinda Breaux have worked with the city's homeless facilitated collaborative process to foster discussions and work between the Assembly and Mayor as third-party facilitators. In a letter to Assembly leaders in Bronson on Thursday, the two wrote, quote, "The transparency, candor, and we are all in this together attitude that enabled earlier progress has, in our opinion, broken down in recent months." Reached by phone on Friday, Breaux declined to comment beyond the letter. Her and Barrett's departure comes as the city prepares to close the shelter at the Sullivan Arena on June 30th. The mayor's plan has been criticized by homelessness advocates. This week could be a big one for members of the Cook Inlet Drift Fleet like Jeffrey Widman of Anchorage. It's when he plans to put his boat in the water to start his 47th season of commercial salmon fishing. And it's when he might find out where he can fish. Widman is waiting to hear from the courts on whether a large section of Cook Inlet will be closed to drift fishermen for the first time this summer. That's after a federal council voted to close that part of the inlet to commercial salmon fishing in 2020. In the aftermath, fishermen sued to keep it open. The courts had until today to make a decision. KDLL's Sabine Pook spoke to Widman and Tony Lindau of Soldotna at the Kenai Dock late last week ahead of the opener.
Okay, our first opener is Monday the 20th, and our last opener is normally around August 15th.
So what do you have to do in these last couple days to prep?
Getting nets on the boat, to make sure the motor's running, we have all our food and things we need aboard the boat, extra parts, ready to go for the season, and then we launch.
How has the fishing changed over the years? Of course it has changed. Has that been something that's impacted you guys specifically?
Well, I went from making $100,000 a year to making 20 or 10. So that means that I can't afford to buy a new diesel motor, which might be $50,000. It means that I have to make old machinery work so that I can make it through the times, and sometimes no deckhand because can't really afford to have one here. Everybody, all the good deckhands want to go over to the bay. Parts and pieces. And right now, my boat's going to sit on the beach for a day or two, or maybe even opener or two, because it's not worth to go out in the very beginning here, along with we're waiting for a ruling from the court system to tell us where we can and can't fish.
At the first part of the season, that's where a lot of the fish are. It's way south from here, but sometimes it's worth a run down there because the fish are down there in big schools and stuff. But lately with this corridor they've been putting us in, we don't get on those big schools of fish. We basically get them when they're trickling in. And I mean, we used to fill up our boats, and just that doesn't happen anymore.
A lot of these people, they're hurting. Unless you're a good fisherman or you've invested a lot, like, you're not going to go out and buy a $200,000 boat and then pay $37,000 for the permit. Unless you were born into this, win the lottery, or you've been fishing for somebody who's willing to turn it over or help you out, you're not going to get into a fishery.
So despite the state of things, what keeps you two coming back here? Like, why do you keep participating in the fishery?
It's in our blood.
I love it. It's in my blood. Yeah. It's what I've been doing.
Since we were kids, and just like see big hits hit the net, you know, splashing on the cork line, and it's exciting. You run the net, run in a great big school and stuff, and just your net, your cork line sinks. You can just see their silver bodies flashing, and they break the surface. Wow, it's fun.
Nothing more exciting than being on the water. I mean, I do better when I'm on the water.
That was KDLL's Sabine Pook speaking with Cook Inlet fisherman Jeffrey Widman and Tony Lindo in Kenai. Electric cars are increasingly common, but not on all Alaska roads. A Fairbanks man has made it a hobby to drive his Tesla on some of the state's most remote and rough roads. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, that includes a nearly 1,000-mile journey up the Dalton Highway from Fairbanks to Dead Horse and back.
I love to adventure with it, just to try to make it and hoping that I don't get stranded out there.
Robert Tucker says he fully charged his Tesla Model 3 Performance at an RV park in Fox, north of Fairbanks, before starting the pioneering EV round-trip journey up the Dalton Highway last week.
And drove all the way up to Coldfoot Camp. For the majority of the way, I just did 35 miles per hour. So it was quite a lengthy drive, but I made it. Pulled in the Coldfoot camp with 16% battery.
Tucker says he stayed at a hotel in Coldfoot for two nights, initially charging with a standard 110-volt outlet.
But after talking with them, they do have a welding shop there, and they let me finish up on their welding outlets running at 220 volts. So it's much quicker.
Fully charged, Tucker says he hit the road north again.
And then made it all the way up to Prudhoe Bay.
Tucker says the hotel in Dead Horse only had standard power outlets, so it took him 2 days to charge before turning around to complete the round trip in 6 days. He says he only hit one bad bump on the 978-mile journey.
And my car didn't clear it, so I'm pretty sure the bottom of my car is not happy with me.
Tucker says as far as he's been able to determine, he's the first person to make the Dalton Highway round trip to Dead Horse and back in a Tesla.
There's been one other to make it all the way to Prudhoe. They came up in a Model S back in 2015, but they didn't make the round trip. They got up there and had to have it trucked back down.
Tucker says his Tesla journey on the Dalton definitely attracted a lot of attention, including from numerous cyclists along the way.
So there's a lot of them giving me thumbs up and waving. Same with vehicles driving by. I remember one RV just came to a complete stop and like stared at me as I drove by.
After arriving back in Fairbanks, Tucker says he headed for the gravel Nabesna and McCarthy roads into Wrangell-St. Elias National Park, adding to a list of Alaska road trips that started with driving the Tesla up the Alcan when he moved to the state for work in 2019.
Drove it all the way up to Fairbanks from South Carolina and got here. I've taken it almost everywhere in Alaska. Homer, Seward, Hope, Whittier, across the Denali Highway, out to the end of the Denali National Park, Circle, and the Manly Hot Springs.
Tucker's final Tesla Alaska adventure will take him back down the Alcan later this summer when he leaves the state to move to Texas. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. We had reports tonight from Eric Stone in Ketchikan, Robert Woolsey in Sitka, Wesley Early in Anchorage, Angela Denning in Petersburg, Sabine Pooks in Kenai, and Dan Bross in Fairbanks. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us, news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Tobin Shelby. Annie Fite produced tonight's program. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
ConocoPhillips, investing in oil exploration and production and working to create economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, unlocking Alaska's energy resources.
Planning today for a gift down the road builds a legacy of support for the media you treasure. Thank you for considering this public radio station in your estate planning. You can talk to your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.